The retirement and IRA show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Saulnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Bring out your dead!
Here's one.
Ninepence.
I'm not dead.
What?
Nothing. Here's your ninepence.
I'm not dead. Here. He says he's not dead.
Yes, he is.
I'm not. He isn't?
Well, he will be soon. He's very ill.
I'm getting better.
No, you're not. You'll be stone dead in a moment.
Oh, I can't take him like that. It's against regulations.
I don't want to go on the car.
Oh, don't be such a baby.
I can't take him.
I feel fine.
Well, do us a favour.
I can't.
Well, can you hang around a couple of minutes? He won't be long.
No, I've got to go to Robinson's. They've lost 9 today.
Well, when's your next run?
Thursday.
I think I'll go for a walk.
You're not fooling anyone, you know. Look. Isn't there something you can do?
I feel happy! I feel happy!
Ah, oh, thanks very much.
Well, it's true. He's not dead yet. We've got Jim on the show today, finally. Welcome, Jim. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, Chris. Hopefully everybody can hear me. And yeah. Yes, I'm not dead yet, I like to say. You know, that is not dead Fred. Did you know that, Pot?
I did know that, actually.
Yes, that's called...
I'm not as big a fan of Monty Python as yourself, but...
Well, I got that from the Spamalot, the Broadway show, Spamalot. So it was called Not Dead Fred. But no, folks, I am not dead. I'm happy to say I'm still kicking, still here. And today's show is going to be kind of a little welcome back show. I want to thank... everyone, I've had listeners reached out to me and sent me their well wishes, and I appreciate it greatly, those of you who did reach out to me. And I'm sure people are a little curious about what happened. And I told Chris that we would use this opportunity, this show, not only to let everyone know I'm back and let everyone know what happened, but I also want people to kind of learn from what I'm going through, not from necessarily a health standpoint, although I may share a little bit of that, but from a financial standpoint, because what has happened to me has impacted my retirement. It's impacted how I viewed it, what I was going to do, and it ties in, Chris, to some of the things we tell people all the time. Your retirement planning is a living, breathing document, and it's going to change. You need to update it every year. You have to keep going and planning and taking your data and re-evaluating it and see if what made sense yesterday is still going to make sense tomorrow. And in my case, a lot of what I was planning on doing no longer makes sense because of what happened to me on November 22nd. And I think what I will do is just share a little bit with everyone what did happen to me. And how, and I already chatted with Chris a little bit about where I want to take today's show. It's not going to be a deep show today, but I do want to share with you a little, because most everyone listening to this podcast, 90% of you, are do-it-yourselfers, you're Vanguardians, and it's fine, we love yous. But you have to start looking at things sometimes the way I need to start looking at things and learn from, in my opinion, a very big mistake I did with regards to my retirement plan. What's it called, Chris? Conventional wisdom? Is that what we fell victim to?
Yeah.
Okay. And we'll explain to you what Chris and I mean by that. But let me just explain, or at least share the story a little bit with everyone on what happened to me. And in short, I suffered a stroke. I would tell you the type of stroke. It begins with an I. Ischemic or something like that, Chris?
Ischemic.
Okay. Mm-hmm. The part of my brain that suffered its injury was not the part that masters the English language. So I'm still going to probably butcher that.
But you have a much better excuse now.
Yes, I have about a quarter-sized dead spot on the right side of my brain, according to the doctors. But, hey, that might help me get out of jail free next time I screw up a woman's name.
Maybe. Or we just got an email recently where they commented that your only hope that they see for a mate in the future would be to find one named Kelly.
True, since I tend to call women Kelly no matter what their name
right.
is.
Exactly.
And I found through painful trial and error, women do not like to be called another woman's name.
I can appreciate that.
I'm not even married, and I know that. So see the things you learn on this show? But I did suffer a stroke, folks, a quite serious stroke from what the doctors have told me. So all jokes aside. But I'll share with you a little bit about what had happened. So November 22nd was a Sunday, and I was actually watching football that day. Normally, I like to be outside doing things, either hiking, hunting, fishing, or just working in my yard. But this particular Sunday, I sat home and I was watching football games. Normally, I record them and I watch them over the next few days, Sunday evening, Monday evening, and I get to fast forward through all the commercials. But I was watching the actual games, and about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, Chris, I kind of looked at the time and I thought, God, you lazy bum, get off the couch and go do something. It's 3 o'clock. So I decided I would go cut some firewood. I heat with firewood. I love it. I heat with firewood because I want to, not because I have to. I just absolutely enjoy being outside and working, and I like to cut and split my own firewood. So I thought, okay, well, I'm going to go grab my chainsaw, cut up some firewood, and bring it up to the house and get about a week's worth or so of firewood or so at the house. So I threw on my junk clothes and walked outside. I went into my barn.
Wasn't camo?
No, I did not have camo on. I had my work clothes. Camo is my hunting clothes.
This man has more camo than 14 people should have.
I do have a lot of camo, yes. So I headed out to the barn, and I started the ATV inside the barn because I used the ATV to haul the firewood up to the house after I split it. As I said, I have 10 acres of land, and the neighbor to the right of me and the neighbor to the left of me also have 10 acres of land, so there's 30 acres between the three of us. And our houses are not close. They're probably 1,000, 1,500 or so feet away from each other. So I grabbed my chainsaw. I went out to the wood pile, which is a little bit behind the barn, and I cut up enough wood, I thought, to get me about a week or two of heat. And I cut firewood very fast. I used to be an arborist, folks. A lot of people don't know that. Before I became a police officer in my 20s, my minor was in arboriculture, and I was an arborist and worked in arboriculture for a good decade of my life before becoming a police officer. And I can operate a chainsaw quite well. So I could not have cut for more than 20 minutes. And when I finished cutting, Chris, I shut the saw off, and I had my bigger saw with me, weighs about, 8-9 pounds, and I was carrying it in my left arm, down by my side like a briefcase. My arm is down, and I'm holding the handle of the chainsaw, and as I'm walking back towards the barn, the chainsaw just unexpectedly falls out of my left arm, my left hand, and hits the ground. And I thought to myself, you idiot, the hell you dropped the chainsaw for? So I bent down, picked it up with my left arm, and took a couple of more steps, and the chainsaw falls out of my hand again, hits the ground. And I got mad at myself, I mean, not to the point where I smacked myself or anything, but I thought, you jerk, what are you doing? and I picked the chainsaw up this time with my right hand, like I'm making my left hand go to time out, and I picked up the chainsaw with my right hand, and I continued to walk towards the barn, showing no dizziness, no signs of anything, but obviously, Chris, at that point, I think the stroke was starting, I just didn't know. And I got to the barn, I walked into the barn, walked by the ATV, and my barn has a dirt floor, folks, and I walked to the back of the barn where I have this table set up, and the table is where I store my chainsaws. And I had the chainsaw in my right hand, and I'm passing it over, Chris, into the left hand, kind of like a trapeze artist, you know, going from one trapeze to the other. I take it from my right hand, and I slide the chainsaw by the handle into my left hand, and I was going to lift it up onto the table. And when I did that, of course, the left hand at this point couldn't hold the saw. I didn't realize that. And the saw starts to fall. So I grabbed it with my right hand by the blade, and I had a thick leather glove on. I'm not silly enough to grab a blade barehanded. I grabbed it by the saw blade and lifted the saw onto the table. And at this point, I'm really cussing myself out, but also thinking, what's going on? My left arm has no power. And I didn't know what the issue was. And I turned to walk out of the barn, and now I'm facing the barn door. And that's when it literally hit me like a ton of bricks. Absolutely just slammed me. I started to get extremely lightheaded, literally starting to black out, seeing black spots coming in and out, just is going black, it's in. And some of the worst nausea that I ever felt in my life. And I thought, God, I'm going to be sick or I'm going to be passing out or something. So I lowered myself to the ground. A lot of people thought I might have fallen then. I did not fall. I have a ton of man toys in that barn. And all the man toys that people make fun of me for buying. But I was surrounded by my man toys, and I used them to lower myself to the ground. I had a DR field and brush mower near me, a power washer, a field and brush sprayer. I had everything around me, and I used them, and I lowered myself to the ground. I laid on my back, feet towards the barn door, head towards the table, spread out, spread eagle, almost like I'm laying on a cross, and I just tried to calm down and breathe. I still didn't know I was having a stroke. I just thought I was physically ill. My mind throughout the entire process, folks, never stopped thinking. I never lost the ability to rationally think. Even though my brain was being damaged, I absolutely had no problem thinking. So I'm laying there and I thought, something's not right. Let's get up. Let's go into the house. If you're still feeling like this, you're going to call 911. I did not have a cell phone on me. It was in the house. And the house was quite far away from the barn. So I thought, okay, no problem. Let's get up and we'll go into the house. And it's at that point that I tried to push myself up with my left arm and I realized it's not moving. I can't move my left arm. Now, the left arm was in a weird position behind my tank sprayer, Chris. You'd have to see it, but the part of the sprayer that I hooked to my ATV trailer so I can haul it through where I do the spraying was kind of in the pit of my arm, my armpit of the left arm, and my arm was on the other side of the trailer. I thought it fell asleep. That's what I thought. I didn't think I was having a stroke, and I didn't think it was paralyzed. I thought, oh, God, I've been laying down in this weird position. My left arm fell asleep. So I used my right arm, and I grabbed onto my DR field and brush mower to pull myself up. And as soon as I started trying to pull myself up, I would get extremely dizzy, start to almost black out, and get incredibly nauseous. Take as nauseous as you ever felt in your life and multiply it by 10, 20, 30. Mm-hmm. That's what I was feeling. And I kept trying to pull myself up and I couldn't because of the nausea. And I thought, all right, well, let me push myself up. And I went to move my left leg and right leg. The right leg moved perfectly. The left leg didn't budge, Chris. Just stayed there. And I tried to push and lift up my leg, and it wouldn't. And it's at that point I'm laying there and I start to think, I think I'm having a stroke. And I felt that way, folks, because I was diagnosed with AFib last year. And they told me one of my risks was stroke. But for a variety of reasons, I did not go on blood thinners. Please save your emails telling me that that was a stupid thing to do, but I did not go on blood thinners, even though the doctors told me the pros and cons about it. And I knew some of the symptoms from stroke, but I also remember the commercial that plays on the radio all the time. I'm one of the geeks that listens to talk radio a lot. And it's the FAST, it's called BFAST now, but it's the signs of a stroke, Chris. And BFAST, it's balance, eyesight, and then face, arm, speech, time. BFAST. I knew my arm wasn't working. I knew I was dizzy and my eyesight would go if I lifted my head off the ground. While it was on the ground, I wouldn't say I felt fine, but I felt a lot better than if I lifted my head off the ground. And I knew my left leg wasn't working. So I thought, what about speech? Can I talk? So I started to do the podcast. As funny as that sounds, I started to do the podcast and started trying to say, hi, my name is Jim. Today we're going to talk about on the podcast. And I could think the words I wanted to say, Chris, but as I tried to say them, they were all muffled. And my doctor has told me, I know some of the neurosurgeons thought it might have been because of where the speech was stored in my brain. I don't want to get too deep into that. I think I shared that story with you, Chris. Mm-hmm. But my doctor said, no, he disagrees. When he talked to me after the stroke, he thinks I was having difficulty pronouncing words because the left side of my face was paralyzed and I couldn't pronounce my words. He read the descriptions from the initial doctors and the, I guess, paramedics who described that my left side was drooping. I couldn't see if the left side of my face was drooping or not. But either way, folks, I was trying to pronounce the words I was thinking, and they were not coming out. We may joke on the show that I mispronounce words all the time. It wasn't that I was mispronouncing the words. I couldn't sound them. And it was just coming up all muffled, almost like, hello, my name is Jim. And I couldn't talk. So it was at that point I realized I'm having a stroke. And in the BFAST, the T stands for time. I had no idea how much time I had. I just knew I needed to get help. But put yourself in my shoes, folks. I'm in a barn on 10 acres of land. My barn is towards the middle of my property. Well, I wouldn't say the middle, the top third of my property. But I'm in the back of a barn. Only one of my barn doors is open. An ATV is running inside it. And I'm laying paralyzed on the dirt floor in the back of that barn. I have one neighbor to the left and one neighbor to the right. The neighbors that are on my right, or actually in the position I was in, yeah, they were on my right, but they're technically on my left if I was up at the top of my driveway. But the neighbors on my right are an older couple in their 70s. The neighbor on my left was a younger guy who was just turning 30. And that was it. And both of them were about 1,000 or so feet away from me. I knew I was in some dire straits because it's Sunday afternoon. I'm figuring it's about 3:30, 4 o'clock by then. And I knew staff wouldn't even begin to worry about me not being in the office till about noon the following Monday. And by the time they even came down to check on me, or at least call for a welfare check to the sheriff's department, might be 1:30 before someone got here. Nearly 24 hours after my stroke, about 22 hours I was figuring. Again, my brain never stopped rationally thinking, and all these thoughts are going through my head. And I figured, I got to get the hell out of the barn. I kept trying to yell for help, but the word wouldn't come out. It sounded more like, ew, ew. And I thought, I got to get out. No one is going to hear me with the running ATV. Those damn things are loud.
Yeah.
And I also figured maybe the barn could fill with carbon monoxide, but it's a pretty big barn. I didn't, and the door was open. I wasn't too worried about that, but I knew no one would hear me yelling. And it's getting dark. It's got to be almost 4 o'clock, quarter of 4, 4. I wasn't sure. So I had to somehow drag my body because I couldn't get up. Every time I tried lifting myself up, I used my man toys with my right arm to try to pull myself up. Every time my head left the ground, I would get the, I can't even describe the nausea I felt. And then literally blacking out, literally seeing black, and then I'd see, and then it'd go black again, and then I'd see. It was weird. But if I put my head back down and laid, I felt at least I could keep my eyes open and I felt a little better. But I had to turn around. My head was facing away from the door. And I had one good leg and one good arm to be able to do that. And I kept dragging and pulling on my man toys and dragging and kicking with my right foot until somehow I got my head to face out towards the barn door and towards the ATV. And then I kept dragging myself towards the ATV and dragging myself towards the ATV. It took an incredibly long time to get to the ATV. And when I got there, I could clearly see my younger neighbor to the left, and I was hoping he would go outside to his goats. He's a big hunter like I am, except he's younger, so he's not as adverse to a lot of hard hunting. So he's a bow hunter, and he likes to backcountry camp as he bow hunts. So he bought a bunch of pack goats. I never even know there was such thing as called pack goats. But these are goats who carry all his stuff when he's hunting. And he's always out in his goat kennel or pen or whatever they call it, messing around with the goats. And I could clearly see that area. And I was hoping I could see him. And then I was going to try yelling as loud as I could, and hopefully he would hear me. These are the thoughts going through my head. So I'm laying there on the floor of the barn looking at the goat kennel, and I don't see him. But what I could see, Chris, are car after car after car going down County Road 4, the road I live on. And I kept thinking, those people can save me. They're just 1,000, 1,500 or so feet away. And then I realized the ATV. If I could get myself onto the ATV, maybe I can get it into gear and get it up to the road. And then my intent was I was going to plop off the ATV and let it go into the road slowly on idle if I wasn't going to be driving it. And that would hopefully force a car to stop, and they would find me. That was what I was going to try doing. But every time I kept trying to pull myself up onto the ATV, I would grab the shift lever of the ATV with my right hand. I'd nearly pass out as soon as I would lift my head off the ground. And then even if I could get my head high enough, I couldn't move my left leg or my left arm, and there was no way I could pull myself onto the ATV. So I thought, well, this isn't going to work. So I laid myself back down and started to think, I got to get out of the barn and then try yelling. And hopefully my other neighbors, the couple in their 70s, would hear me because they have chickens. And I was hoping they would be outside caring for their chickens before it got dark. So I kept pulling and pulling, and I finally got out of the barn. Mostly because the barn doors slide between two big railroad ties. There's a railroad tie and then about a 6-inch space where the barn door slides and then another railroad tie. And I thought those railroad ties would slow me down, but they actually helped me because I could get my right arm around them, pull myself right up, jam my right leg into that 6-inch opening where the door slides, Chris, and I just pushed myself out. Poof, it was real easy. And I pushed myself out of the barn, and now I'm out and in the corner of my barn. And I felt this is better because now people hear me yelling, and I kept trying to yell help, but again, the word's not coming out, so I was just trying to make the infection help. Just kind of yelling that. And I was realizing no one's going to hear it. I don't think I'm yelling very loud. I couldn't get a good yell in. And I was, of course, laying down. I couldn't lift my head up. I couldn't stand. I couldn't do anything. I was paralyzed totally on the left. But I also started to get very nervous at this point for two reasons. It was colder than hell when I got out. You know my driveway. You've been in it, Chris. It's all rock. It's about 1 inch rock. And that corner of my barn gets a lot of shade. It was freezing, freezing cold. I had just a T-shirt on. I forgot to say that part. I had jeans and a T-shirt on. And then a flannel shirt over the T-shirt, but it wasn't even buttoned. It was just an unbuttoned flannel shirt. And I'm laying on it face down, my stomach face down, and freezing cold, absolutely cold. But I also started to worry because I knew I work outside in my yard constantly, folks. You all know I like to fish, hike, hunt, and garden. So I'm always in my yard gardening and doing things. I knew by the direction of where the sun was. When I walked into the barn, I walked in through sunshine. When I pushed myself out that barn door, it was totally shaded. I knew by now it's after 4 o'clock. It's a lot after 4 o'clock for the sun to be below the roof line of my barn for there to be shade there. I can tell no matter where I am in my yard what time it is based on where the sun is. I've just been doing this so long, I knew. And I knew it gets dark around 5 o'clock. And I thought, no one is going to see me in another half hour. And I kept seeing those cars going by, Chris, at the top of the road. And I thought to myself, I got to push myself and drag myself to that road. And that's what I tried to do, folks. I kept dragging with, it was like a wounded caterpillar, is the best way I can describe it. I would pull with my right arm, push with my right leg, pull with my right arm, push with my right leg, trying to keep my head on my right arm. I could not lift my head. I'm not trying to sound gross at this point, folks, but I was also vomiting uncontrollably because the nausea was just unbelievable. Of course, I'd have to keep dragging myself even through that. And eventually, it was just dry heaves. There was just nothing left, but I cannot describe the nausea I felt. And I kept doing that for what seemed like a long time, and I think I might have made it 30 feet. And now it is almost dark. And I'm freezing, and I thought, I can't make it to the road, and even if I do, it's still 600, 700, 800 feet away. Even if I made it, it'll be pitch black, and no one's going to see me. I live on a county road, folks, with no street lights. It would have been pitch black. So I looked to the goats. They were there, but my neighbor wasn't. I looked to where the elderly couple were. You can't really see their house, but I was hoping I could see them walking through the trees. I didn't see anything. But what I did see saved my life. Because as I was looking towards that house, Chris, the trailer that I was going to hook up to the ATV to haul the firewood was about 50 feet away from me. And that trailer, folks, is made out of thin metal. It's not a very thick, heavy trailer. You pull it with a lawnmower or an ATV. It's not a heavy-duty, manly trailer. But I know when I used to throw firewood into it, Chris, it makes a lot of damn noise.
Yeah.
A lot of noise. And as I said, folks, my driveway is all rock. So I started dragging myself towards the trailer. And when I finally reached it, I picked up the biggest rock with my right arm that I could see, and I just started banging and banging and banging the side of the trailer. The trailer is very low to the ground. It's got very fat tires, so it doesn't ruin grass, but it sits very low. I would say it only has about a 5-6 inch clearance, so it was not hard for me laying on the ground to pick up a rock and hit that metal side, Chris, because it's only 5-6 inches off the ground. That's where the story ends as far as I'm concerned, because I don't remember much after that. My neighbor, whose name is Tyler, picks up the story. He told me when I finally went home from the hospital what happened with him. He shared with me that he normally works nights. He got assigned the overnight midnight shift several months ago. And on Sundays, he usually leaves his house at 4 o'clock. And if that had happened on this particular Sunday, he would have never heard me because I was still in the barn. I wasn't out of the barn until after 4. But he was told on Thursday, with no explanation, he was just told not to come in on Sunday, don't report to work till Monday. So he decided instead, Chris, to go deer hunting. And he went deer hunting, and he never got his deer. So as the night got closer and closer, he was getting colder and a little bit bored, and he decided to leave early and get home a little earlier. And he said he got home a little after 5 o'clock, and when he left his, got out of his truck and walked into his house, he heard banging coming from my house, and he heard some type of commotion, some type of yelling, but he couldn't make out what was being said, but he could hear banging. And he said, noise from your house, because you're always doing things, isn't odd. So he kept walking into his house, and he went into his house. And he said he started undressing from his hunting clothes, but something in the back of his mind kept thinking, that doesn't sound right. I never heard that sound from Jim's before. So he said he went back outside and listened, and he could clearly hear banging and some type of commotion and yelling. And he said he doesn't know why. He just grabbed his flashlight, because it was pitch black at this point, and he walked towards my house. And again, we have acreage, and we both have barbed wire fences. My property is horse property, even though I don't have horses. So he had to go over his barbed wire fence and my barbed wire fence. He said about halfway towards my house, the noise stopped. But none of my lights were on, and he knew I had motion-sensing lights. So he couldn't figure out, no, none of the lights are on. This banging just mysteriously stopped. The yelling mysteriously stopped. And he just decided to keep checking it out, Chris. And when he finally found me, he said I was face down near the trailer and not moving. I had passed out. And I do remember him shining the flashlight, screaming my name, and I woke up and I could see the flashlight, but I instantly knew his voice. I knew it was Tyler. And I just said as best I could, I'm having a stroke, and tried to tell him that I was having a stroke. And I remember what he said to me next, Chris, because it just cut through me. I said to him, I'm having a stroke, call 911. And he said to me, I don't have my phone. He left his house without his phone. So I just yelled, my house, my house. And long story short, he ran into the house. He found my cell phone, which allows you to call 911 on the lock screen. So when he told me this part of the story, I went to my phone and I looked that night. He called 911 at 5:20. So I'm guessing the stroke happened around 3:30, and 911 was called at 5:20. They got there within 10 minutes or less, and they got me onto the gurney. They asked me what hospital you want to go to, which I thought was the stupidest thing to ask someone who's having a stroke. And Boston Jim, Chris, if he could talk, Boston Jim was going to rip him a new one. I mean, I was a cop for 9 years, and I never remember once a paramedic asking a victim, where would you like to go? You took him to the closest hospital. But he asked me, where do you want to go? And my mind was thinking, what kind of stupid question is that? Although other expletives were flying through my mind. Remember, folks, my mind never stopped working. I knew everything that was going on when I wasn't passed out. And all's what I said to him, Chris, was, I don't care, I don't care. Longmont, Longmont. And I remember someone saying, okay, Longmont. And as they're putting me in the back of the ambulance, Chris, I thought to myself, wait a minute. They're going to take you to the one on 17th Street. And nothing against anyone who lives in Longmont who might be listening to this. Nice hospital. But the one on 17th Street is not a high-end hospital. But it was the closest to my house. And I didn't want to go there. I went there before for stitches. I just didn't like the hospital. So I started screaming, Chris, because I thought, what an idiot. You have that relatively new hospital out near the highway, MCR. And I thought, that's a better hospital to go to. I didn't know what they were going to have to do to save my life. And it just so happens, me saying, changing my mind and going to MCR, I think really played a role in me being here today. So I started screaming in the back of the ambulance, no, no, MCR, MCR. I just kept screaming, MCR. And I remember someone yelling to me, it's further away, it's further away. And I kept screaming, no, MCR, MCR. Until I finally heard reply back to me, they would take me to MCR. And they also kept asking me, Chris, what time did this happen? What time did this happen? And again, Boston Jim is thinking, who the hell cares? Well, it plays an important role, apparently. I didn't know that. And I kept telling him, I think 3:30, 3:30. But I couldn't understand why they kept asking that. Well, they took me to MCR. MCR is a really nice hospital, folks. It really is. It's about 10 years old now, but it's a big hospital in Northern Colorado. It's known for their hearts. And I thought in the back of my mind, I'm thinking my AFib caused the stroke, which is a problem with my heart. Maybe being at a heart hospital is a good thing. Well, when we got to MCR, they assessed instantly what the issue was. And next thing I hear is people yelling, take them to Medevac, take them to Medevac, and Aurora, Aurora. The helicopter folks, which they used to Medevac me to South Denver, is stored at MCR. Mm-hmm. And I think if I would have went to Longmont, like I originally said, it would have taken precious time because that Longmont hospital doesn't have a helipad. It lands in a field near them, about 300 or 800 yards from the hospital. This one, they had me at the helipad in no time, Chris, because it's right there. It's all inside. You go right up to the helipad, up on the roof or wherever they keep it. And they had me at Aurora in no time. I remember a doctor running next to the side of my gurney as I'm being pushed really fast through the trauma unit to surgery, telling me that he's a physician. He is going to be doing a procedure on me. If I don't have the procedure, I could die. If I do have the procedure, there's no guarantee anything's going to work. Does he have my permission? I would have given permission to do anything at that point.
Right.
And I just told him, sure. I mean, yes. I mean, what am I going to do? Hey, can I Google this to see what the side effects are? Absolutely. And that's all I remember. It all happened from there. What they ended up doing, folks, is they gave me an injection called a TPA. I have no idea what that stands for. But they gave me that at MCR, and that's why they were asking, when did this happen? Apparently, it's a very potent blood thinner, but they can't give it if it's been more than 3 hours from your initial stroke because you can actually suffer a brain bleed. And because I could remember when I estimated the time and I did get found within that 3 hour window and get to the hospital within that 3 hours, they could give me that TPA, which I think really did help me. And then of course they got me to the hospital really fast, the trauma unit where the neurology department of UC Health is. Even though I talk openly, folks, about leaving Colorado for a variety of reasons, and I still most likely will leave Colorado. Colorado has phenomenal health care. The doctor who did my procedure, they did do brain surgery on me. The doctor who did the procedure came into my room afterwards, the next day or the following day, I forget, and introduced himself to me. He moved here, and I think pretty much everyone that I met had moved to Colorado. So we get a lot of bright, young, intelligent people moving here. So healthcare-wise, Colorado was phenomenal. They did what is called a thrombectomy or something like that on me, where they essentially went into my brain, found the clot, and removed it. Pretty amazing. And I think what's most amazing is I'm moving. I recovered full movement. I know in the ICU, the neurology ICU, when I came to, I was looking down at my foot. I could see my left foot sticking up from the corner of the bed. And I remember thinking and concentrating and looking at the foot and trying to move it to the right. And I kept trying and trying and thinking about moving. And then I eventually, Chris, saw it tilt a little to the right. It was amazing. And I felt so relieved. I just thought, I can move. And within a day, I'm talking to the IC room nurse. The following day after that, I'm walking. And the rest is history. Am I out of the woods? No. I have issues that I still feel with fatigue, extreme fatigue that just hits me out of the blue. I have no idea when it hits me. I can't even describe it. And I am just wicked tired. And I just want to go to sleep. And then there's other periods where my head just hurts. Not a throbbing headache type hurt, just this general soreness that just never stops. And of course, we have to deal with my AFib and a bunch of other things that we have to clear up. But that's the long and the short of it. What I want to share with people and why I kind of shared this whole story is twofold. First, if you have AFib or you're diagnosed with it, don't treat it the way I did, which was, it's no big deal. I'm young, youngish, healthy. I hike all the time. I'm hunting, I'm fishing, I'm camping. There's no big deal. This AFib's not bothering me. I would take it a little bit more serious than what I did. And every neurosurgeon who came in, I was kind of a little celebrity in the neuro ward because of how quickly I rebounded from a very significant stroke. The doctor who actually operated on me contacted my family and told them that I was likely to never walk again. I would probably be paralyzed. He just didn't know to what extent based on the severity of my paralysis when I first got to the trauma unit and they were doing their initial assessment. So he was shocked at how quickly I recovered. So I feel I've been given a second chance, and I want people to take AFib seriously if you are diagnosed with it. But the other reason I want to share this story as we wrap up is because my entire retirement plan has been thrown under the bus, if you will. Chris and I, we don't do a lot of conventional wisdom with our retirement planning. Would you agree, Chris?
Yeah, I think we've kind of not kept ourselves within the confines or restrictions of, we've already, this is how it's always been done. It should be done this way kind of thinking. We kind of apply our own intelligence and common sense and rethink a lot of things. As people have noticed, if you've been listening to the podcast, we don't talk about things quite the same as a lot of folks in the planning world. But I will say that in this particular regard, you were looking at things in a conventional way as far as the general basic recommendation or suggestion for obtaining long-term care insurance, which is not necessarily to get it at a young age.
Exactly. Chris and I, we look at retirement planning itself differently than the industry does. We don't buy into their conventional wisdom of Monte Carlo projection, probability statistic, safe withdrawal rate crap. We've talked about that all the time and why we don't like that. And I won't get into it today. We do the same with investment management, that I really don't think most financial planners who are also being investment advisors are really earning their keep for the 1.25%, 1.5% of your assets they take every year. I think it's a ripoff. I've said that before. But one place where Chris and I totally missed the boat, especially me, I'm not throwing Chris under the bus on this, was with my own retirement plan. I am a single man. We joke about that a lot on this show. I don't have a wife. I don't have children. Long-term care is a huge issue for me. I don't want to be in a facility. I want to try to remain in my home as long as I can. So long-term care was always important to me. Always. And with that in mind, I always thought conventional wisdom in our industry, Chris, says you start buying long-term care insurance after age 60. And I shared that with Chris, that I was originally going to be looking at a hybrid policy from a company called Pacific Life because I liked their concierge service they offered. But I had changed my mind over the past few years, and I was looking at creating my own hybrid policy, a strategy that I will share on a future show. I think everyone should consider what I was going to do. But I always had in my plan, I was going to buy the insurance when I hit 60. Well, last year when I was 56, I got diagnosed with AFib. And Greg in our office, the gentleman who does our long-term care planning for our clients, he told me when I told him about my diagnosis, he says, Jim, you're not going to get long-term care insurance now. I said, excuse me? He said, AFib. With AFib, you could suffer a stroke. It is a disqualifying condition unless you get it treated and you go for at least 2 years without any AFib symptoms. So it wasn't that I wasn't going to be insurable. It just meant that I was going to have to treat it, show no symptoms for at least 2 years, and then try to find a carrier that might consider covering me. But in my mind, Chris, I said, oh, no problem. I was going to buy it anyways in my 60s. We'll see. I'll try to get it fixed by then. Well, now with a significant stroke like I suffered, plus my AFib, I won't get long-term care insurance anymore. Now, there's a couple of carriers that might consider giving me the time of day, but not anytime soon. And I would have to get my AFib completely under control, be symptom-free for at least 2 years, and also have my stroke and the risk of the stroke completely under control, or future strokes. Reality, I'll never get long-term care. Even though some companies might consider me, I don't think I'll ever get it. And it has thrown my entire retirement plan asunder. Because what we often say on this show, all you do-it-yourselfers who are going to self-fund your long-term care. I was never going to self-fund it. I'm not that naive. I was going to use insurance. My mistake was I waited too long to buy it. But everyone out there, whether you're going to try self-funding or you're going to try to buy it, I don't think you should wait until your 60s. I think when you make the decision, and you shared with me this, Chris, just the other day when I told you I was going to come back on the podcast, when you decide insurance is going to be part of your long-term care plan, that's when you should get insurance. Correct, Chris?
Yeah, and I use, you know, examples like yours as justification for that, that if you want to keep that as an option, do it now while you can get it, because at any moment something could happen and now that option is taken from you. And for people who have thought about it and have decided not to do it, then they've decided they don't want the option. But if you are even considering it, I think you should go ahead and pull the trigger, because you never know. And then you can always undo it. You can't make up for missing it. Then it might be missed forever. If you get it and then decide later, oh, you don't need it as part of your plan, you can stop it. You're not obligated to keep it for life. But if you don't want to have that choice taken from you, you should embrace it while you can make the choice, is my personal opinion.
And now, do-it-yourselfers, look at the bind I'm in, or look at the predicament, bind, situation. I always was going to help fund my long-term care through a combination of insurance or risk pooling, if you will. I was going to take a little bit of an annual premium and pool it with millions of other people to get a tremendously large benefit if I had to file a claim. That's called risk pooling, otherwise known as the word insurance. And I was going to combine that with the equity in my personal residence. Now, why was I going to use the equity in my personal residence? Simple. Number one, again, I'm single. I have no kids to leave my house to. I could also, if I needed to go into a facility, and hopefully not a skilled nursing facility with 24/7 skilled care, otherwise known as a nursing home, but perhaps even in an assisted living facility, where I'm at the age where I don't need 24/7 support, but I do need someone looking in on me a couple of times a day, making sure I'm okay, making sure my medicines are laid out right, anything like that. If I ever had to leave my house and go to one of these facilities, I don't need, there's no one else, there's no spouse staying behind in that house. There's no child that I want to leave the house to. So I could sell the entire house, I could sell the entire contents and turn them into money. I could monetize the equity, I could monetize all the property I had, I could monetize all my man toys and everything else, and that would also, Chris, combined with my policy, in my calculation, cover a good deal, if not all, of what I thought at the time would be a typical long-term care need, which is 3 years or less of actual care.
And that's kind of a combo self-funding portion of it. It's not completely relying on the benefits of an insurance policy. If you try to have an insurance policy that's so robust it could cover any situation, they're pretty high-end and pretty expensive. So it's kind of a by taking on some risk, in your case, admitting that you or deciding that you could use some of your own assets to monetize and help with your care, you don't need quite as large of a policy, but either on its own wouldn't be quite enough. So that's where the combination works well in that particular kind of approach to add robustness to your situation.
Exactly. But now look at the problem I'm in now, folks. I don't run a risk, in all honesty, of suffering a typical LTC event. Typical LTC event, you're going to need it for less than 3 years. Most people need it for less than 7 months. But a typical need is 3 years or less. A stroke, should I suffer another one? Should my AFib treatment go haywire in the future? There's no cure for AFib. Let's keep that out there right now. I can get an ablation. I can get it's either a Wokeman, Workman, Watchman, I think a Watchman procedure, something like that, or a ablation, or a couple of drugs, or blood thinners. None of them are a guarantee you'll never have AFib or a stroke. They can treat it, they can't cure it. If I were to suffer a stroke and be older and perhaps not have the strength that I had the day I had the stroke on November 22nd, I could theoretically be paralyzed for a very long time, 10, 15, 20 years. And that is a very significant long-term care cost. And I have to factor that into my planning now. But I am not going to be able to pool any of that risk, and I'm going to have to self-fund the whole thing. And now I have to look at using not just the equity in my home. I told Chris recently, the building we're in right now, my office, has now been delegated in my retirement plan to being my long-term care plan or part of it. I'm going to need the entire equity in this building to help fund my LTC. I have said repeatedly on this show, folks, when you're working on coming up with your fund number, when you're divvying up your assets Remember, saving for retirement is the easy part, for Pete's sakes. The hard part is taking this big pool of money, whether you've amassed $500,000 or $1 million or $3 million or $5 million, the dollar amount is immaterial. You have this big cherry pie of assets. We got to slice that up. Minimum dignity floor, long-term care, guaranteed inheritance, aging assistance, buffer, all these different slices. And what's left when everything is done is fun, F-U-N. Well, part of my fun money, Chris, was going to be the equity in this building. Why? When I crunched the numbers and I was only trying to protect a typical LTC need of less than 3 years, the numbers worked. But I'm not naive. It would be malpractice, my own malpractice, if I kept trying to fund my LTC plan under the guise I'm going to need it for 3 years or less, knowing that I could have another stroke at any minute and be paralyzed like I was, but this time not pull out of it like I did the first time. So not only do I have to dedicate the equity in my house, I have to dedicate the entire building, the office. And because you can only spend a dollar once, which is what I preach all the time when you're divvying up your cherry pie, you can't spend it on fun things in your 60s and have it again in your 80s for long-term care or aging assistance. I've had to pull all the value of my office building into the pie slice going to my long-term care. And where do you think that pie slice came from, folks? Came from my fun money. And now I've got to say, well, do I work longer to replenish that fun money? Do I try to get more money from elsewhere? Do I take more investment risk? I don't think that's the answer, not at 57. Do I cut my fun spending? I could, but it's the only life I'm going to have. What's the purpose of retiring if I can't do anything? Am I going to sit there and eat bonbons all day? Do I work longer? I wouldn't be against that. I actually love what I do. What do I do? I don't know. I have to look at all of these things. And so do you guys. And what I want you guys to think of, all you do-it-yourselfers out there, first, if long-term care insurance is something you are contemplating, and personally, I think you're a fool if you're not. There was one moment of time when I was on the side of that ATV, after I've given up trying to drag myself onto the ATV, and before I decided to try to drag myself to the road, which again never happened, but it got me out far enough to see the trailer when I realized bang on the trailer. Before all that happened, I was laying in the barn looking out at the road and the cars going by and the goat kennel to the left of the road and thinking to myself as I'm laying there, I'm not going to be able to afford to take care of myself. I didn't think I'd ever walk again, folks. And I thought, if I'm going to be paralyzed forever, how am I going to pay for this? The time to think about how you're going to pay for aging is not when you're paralyzed on the dirt floor of a barn having a stroke. Now, I had thought of it before, but I'd only planned for 3 years. And I hadn't bought the insurance yet because conventional wisdom said I'm too young. Get it in your 60s. You're stupid. You don't have to buy it in your 50s. Get it in your 60s. I want you guys to take that conventional wisdom and throw it out the door. Throw it out the door with Monte Carlo projections, probability statistics, safe withdrawal rates, asset under management fee, advisor alpha, and now let's throw next to that, hold off to 60s to buy long-term care insurance. Throw all of that crap out the door because it's BS. You should be buying your long-term care insurance when you decide, I am going to fund some of my care that way. I'm not going to use all my assets. I'm going to do some risk pooling. That's when you would start to consider LTC. Don't wait to your 60s like I did. If you have AFib, don't take it lightly like I did. I nearly paid for it with my life, or at least with my ability to walk and talk. And over the coming months, we're going to talk more about long-term care, atypical and typical needs, how you're going to self-fund it if you're going to try to self-fund. Don't call it self-insurance, folks. There's no insurance. If you're using your assets to cover it, you are self-funding. And what are the big mistakes people make when they self-fund? There's many. And we are going to teach you. If you're going to self-fund, I have no problem with that. Many of our listeners to this podcast have millions in assets. You might be able to afford to self-fund and still afford to do all the fun things you want to do. If you are, you're blessed. Not everybody is in your boat. But there are still mistakes a lot of people make when they try to self-fund. We're going to teach you over the coming months what mistakes to try to avoid. But I hope you learned a little bit from this podcast and weren't too bored by it. But I share with you all the time how I'm thinking of relocating out of Colorado, moving to Kentucky or Southern Ohio, somewhere around the Ohio River Valley, and why, and everything I'm contemplating there. Well, now I'm sharing openly with you what nearly happened to me, but how it's impacted my own retirement plan. And I have to take from my fund number now and put it towards my aging assistance. I'm taking it from one pie slice to another pie slice. I only have so much pie, folks. So that's what I have to do. And how am I going to do it? And what can you learn from the mistake I made, which was for some bizarre reason not seeing the idiocy of the industry's conventional wisdom on long-term care, which is you buy it in your 60s. Why I never questioned that, but I questioned everything about the safe withdrawal rate and Monte Carlo statistics and probability projections and advisor alpha and active investment management, all these things that I don't ascribe to. But I never questioned waiting to 60 to buy LTC. And let me tell you, there's not a day that goes by since my stroke I haven't asked myself, why the hell didn't I ever question that? I've questioned everything that the industry touts. A damn industry that they try to pretend they're fiduciaries, but all they're doing is they're lining their own damn pockets. Why I never thought of questioning that, Chris. And it cost me. It cost me having to either work longer or cut some of my fund spending in order to cover a risk that I never thought I would have. It's always someone else. Someone else has the heart attack. Someone else has the stroke. Someone else drops dead unexpectedly. It's always someone else. It's never going to be you. That was me. I'm healthy. God, I just hiked a 13er and then I walked 7 miles and shot an elk and dragged it out. I'm healthy. Nothing bad's going to happen to me. AFib, that's for losers. Who cares? I don't need to take any medicine. And look what it did to me. So take your health seriously, especially if you have AFib. But if you're going to self-fund your LTC and you're waiting to a certain age to buy it, excuse me, not self-fund, if you're going to risk pool some of your long-term care and you're waiting till your 60s, to buy into insurance, I'm going to encourage you not to, because it cost me. Mm-hmm. And I will never look at that conventional wisdom again. We, Chris, have to put that also in the trash bin of errors or weird things that the industry says that isn't true. Maybe we should write a book, Weird Things That the Industry Says That Isn't True. And we got to put that in one of our chapters. Wait to 60 to buy your LTC. All right, that's all I have to say, but hopefully I will be back every week. I can't promise that. When I get hit with the fatigue, it hits me hard. I've told staff that, and I have no control over it. It just hits me. And this also general head pain. All the neurologists have told me these are perfectly normal things to experience, side effects to experience after stroke. And they can last several months or longer. So I'm going to try as hard as I can to keep doing the show, go back to answering questions. I do enjoy being here and chatting with you all. But I also want you to learn from mistakes that I have made and also throw this conventional wisdom out the window as well with everything else, because it cost me and cost me dearly.
Well, thanks for coming on and sharing, because I know there were tons of people, because I was getting emails that were wondering exactly what happened. And I know a lot of times people aren't quite as forthcoming with these types of personal issues, but I think your personal story does help kind of frame the way this topic should be viewed. So people can take it, you know, use it for what it's worth in your data gathering for how you want to prepare for your own retirement and live your own lives. But we're all glad that Jim's going to be back, and hopefully he will be back regularly. I'm sure it'll get a little easier as time goes by, but that'll bring us to the end of this show this week. We'll be back again next week with another show. Topic area to be determined, so I can't share that with you. I'm not quite sure. But you take care driving home, Jim. And
I will. We wanted to leave a little earlier. I kind of rambled a little, and I'm going to wrap it up because I don't want to drive in the dark.
Yeah. Sounds good. So we'll be back next week with everybody else with a brand new show.
Okay.
Bye. You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Salmier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Salmier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salmier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Salmier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.